When I was in high school, a freshman in high school, I went to a brand new high school, a brand new building, and it was beautiful. Our class was the first class to go through all 4 years. This building was beautiful and the envy of the other high school in our small town. It was the envy of a lot of people, actually, because in this building was an in-ground pool, or inside pool. We had a whole wing, and there was an Olympic-sized pool inside. And that was a big deal back then. Not every high school had a pool, and certainly our rival high school did not have a pool. So, as a result of that, we, all of us, had to take, part of our PE requirement had to be a semester of swimming. And all the levels of swimming were offered. You just had to sign up for one, half a year, a semester. Now, I was a swimmer in the sense that I could swim. I could swim laps, and I could do most of the strokes. But I couldn't pass the Red Cross thing, you know, the certificate for Red Cross. So I signed up for advanced beginner. That was okay, a little, I don't know, advanced beginner. It doesn't sound very nice. But I was kind of an advanced beginner because I knew a lot of the strokes. I could do most everything I needed to do, except for one thing. This one thing that I could not do, I could not bring myself to do, was dive headfirst into the water. I could jump off the diving board, I could jump in the deep end, I could do all that, but I couldn't dive headfirst. That just freaked me out for whatever reason, and maybe you guys can help me figure that out. I don't know, but I couldn't. And so my instructor, who I hadn't really spent a lot of time with because I knew all the other stuff, spent time with me at the end of the semester because I needed to do that in order to pass. So he came over, and I stood there with my toes at the edge of the pool. And I closed my eyes, and I kept trying, and I'd get down, and I'd stand back up again. I just could not do it. And he was very patient with me. And he noticed the necklace that I had on. He said, after he'd exhausted all of the possibilities, he said, "What's that around your neck?" And it was my cross. And he said, "Do you believe what that symbolizes? Do you believe in that cross?" And I thought, well, yes. Well, if you believe, then what have you to worry about? Just dive. And that was my challenge. He really got me there. So I did. I had to dive, and I did it. I jumped headfirst. It wasn't the most beautiful dive, but it was a dive. And I had to do it twice, and I did. It was that focus on Jesus, as weird as it sounds, in such a weird setting, I was able to dive. I never dived again, and I never will, because it's still kind of scary to me, but I did it when I needed to do it, because my teacher drew me to the cross around my neck, reminded me, "Don't you believe?" It's kind of like what Jesus challenged Martha with when they went to the tomb and said, do you not remember that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? That's what Jesus said to Martha in this story. So we have this story of Lazarus, and it's a very long story, just like we had last week, a very, very long chapter, almost a chapter, and It's a pivotal chapter in John, in the Gospel of John. What's really, really neat, and these are the things that kind of make me get really excited, is that there's a structure to this literary work and this particular gospel. There is an overarching structure. And you know how it is when you look at a literary work and you step back and you see these things, and the structure points you in whatever way, to something specific that makes you focus on that. So in the Gospel of John, there are 21 chapters. Chapter 11, that we're in today, is in the exact middle. There are 10 chapters before, 10 chapters after. So something's important about that. And really, it is the pivotal chapter that changes from these signs. Jesus did the last sign as Lazarus being raised from the dead. And that is the sign that made the authorities really know that they needed to kill him. He had much too much power and things were not looking good. So this was the pivotal moment when things went the other way and Jesus was on his way to death. Now in the middle of chapter 11, there are 57 verses in chapter 11. So almost exactly in the middle, not quite, but almost exactly, is Martha saying something very important. Martha says, "Yes, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." I believe is in the center of the chapter, that's in the center of the gospel. That is pretty darn cool. I believe is at the center of our faith. Now, we don't all believe exactly the same thing, but we're here because we believe. So I think that we believe, what we're believing in is new life. You see, Martha kind of misunderstood Jesus, I think, at first. She misunderstood Jesus when he says, "Your brother will rise." And she thought, okay, I know that. In the resurrection, at the last day, yes, Lazarus will rise again. But then Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life." And Martha thought, okay, yeah, I know, in the future. Not now, but in the future, there will be the last day, and that is when we will see the resurrection. So she still didn't quite get it. Now, when Jesus went to the tomb, and Mary and Martha and all the other people came to the tomb and were in this deep grief, Jesus said, "Roll the stone away, take the stone away." And Martha clearly doubted something because she said, "Lord, Lazarus has been in that tomb for 4 days. It is going to smell horribly. Do you really want to do that?" And that's when Jesus said to her, "Don't you remember? If you believe, you will see the glory of God." So he challenged her, "Don't you remember?" She still wasn't thinking that there was going to be new life right now, right then. So when the stone was rolled over, Lazarus came out. Alive as all get out. He had strips of cloth around him, and the community had to help him take all that up. But he was alive in the present, not in the future. He was alive with new life right then. Now, I believe that that new life is available to all of us in some way. We experience new life all the time. It's in us and around us. For instance, I have experienced new life at times when I've gotten clarity about a particular situation that I've been struggling with, and I don't know what to do, and all of a sudden, I get clarity. It's like, okay, I know what to do next. I've experienced new life when one door has closed and at the same time another one has opened. Here's my plug for autism. Today is Autism Awareness Day in the world, the whole world. World Autism Awareness Day, and I'm wearing blue. And that I have a child with autism who the first time she called me mom was a day of new life. It changed everything. New life. I'm sure there are a lot of things you can think of when you're grieving and community is around you and loving you, you experience that hope of new life. All sorts of things. What brings you or what gives you new life? Where have you experienced new life, now or in the past? That's something important for us to think about. Some of us are reading a book on reconciliation for our Lenten, after our Lenten soup suppers. This book is actually called Living Reconciliation. And living reconciliation is actually a very difficult thing to do, especially in times of conflict. It means that we have to be really good listeners. We have to cross boundaries of all kinds, cultural, economical, racial, all those different boundaries that we have, we need to be willing to cross. It means that we have to resist that desire to persuade the other to agree with us, because that's not necessary for reconciliation. And we have to be willing to entertain the thought that maybe we are not right. We don't have the truth. So we have read some experiences of real life people in conflict or not agreeing over, you know, really important things. Our diocese was involved in this. I think I mentioned it before. And coming together with other dioceses and very different beliefs about homosexuality, about the ordination of women in the church, about gay marriage. Those are really important things, and everyone felt differently in a big way. But when these people sat down and shared their stories, it made a difference. When they sat down and shared meals and worshiped together and formed new relationships, that was new life. They were experiencing new life in building those relationships. Reconciliation per se, well, I should say a resolution to what the conflict was, wasn't necessary. That's not what brought new life. What brought new life was their common belief in Jesus. Their common belief that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Jesus is the Son of God, the Messiah. That is what enabled them to live together, to be together, and to form friendships and relationships together in new life. So we all have that new life available to us. Jesus is the resurrection and the life for all of us, all the time. It's in us, around us, right now, not later, not in the future, but right now. And John pulls out that together really nicely. You see, in the heart of the middle of John, the whole gospel is belief. I believe, we believe. And in the heart of the chapter, I believe, we believe. So John ties belief with new life. But not in this exclusive way, because sometimes we might think, well, I can't have new life unless I believe. That belief is a requirement for new life. And I don't think that that's necessarily true, because that's going to exclude a lot of people, right? New life is there for everybody. So I think the difference is, or what we need to think about, is that we have new life because of Jesus. We have new life because of Jesus. And when we believe that, we experience new life in different ways. We experience being able to roll the stone away. We experience being able to dive into the water head first. We experience going through the darkest times with hope. And we know, when we believe in new life, when we believe in Jesus and that Jesus can give us new life, we understand what that is, which is actually gift. New life is gift, pure gift, and we give thanks for it. We're just about at the end of our Lenten journey, and we're headed to Jerusalem now. and it won't be long. So as we go on this journey, think about new life. Where do you see it? In others, in yourself, where are you seeing new life along this way to Jerusalem? And then believe. Amen.